it's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns
know
fans.
Why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos, maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, we've had missives over the years here at The Fan, as we know. We now have tweets.
What do we got? King Cohen?
Nope. Not your boy.
Figured I'd be on top of that one.
Well, he's usually quiet when the Mets aren't playing well, as we know, so he hasn't said much lately. Russell Wilson has dropped a little tweet here.
Oh, God.
Which is, it's my reaction as well.
Russell Wilson.
It's not incredibly, it's not incredibly wordy. It's a little vague in terms of quarterback room. Okay. I will let you guess.
Well,
it's
two words.
It's only two words.
I was going to say, let's get it. Something corny like
something
that.
Something corny based on, you know, the Hawks, go Hawks, and all the other cheeseball things he did in Seattle. Close, you know, basically depicting the same mindset. Would you like me to tell you what he tweeted 42 minutes ago? Two words, mentally tough, period. Oh, Russ, listen, Russ, Giant fans aren't going to let this fly for too long, man. I say this, I think Russ is a real great competitor, and I think he's, even though corny, a great guy, like a good, a well-purposed person, I should say. Like, I think he tries to do the right thing, I really do. But he needs to understand the venom that the Giant fan has had for a long, long time. You're not one of us. You weren't drafted by the Giants. You weren't developed by the Giants. Nobody wants to see your corny tweets. Go about your job, as I know you will, because I know he's a hard worker. Get your team in the end zone or take a seat and be quiet. These tweets aren't going to fly for much longer.
Now, this is not like the reason why the Giants sucked Sunday was not because of Russell Wilson. All right. Now, he might have been a part of that, whatever you might.
He definitely was.
Certainly past his prime. Yeah. I mean, he's not, to me, the focal point. This is, they've rotated multiple quarterbacks. The offense can't score touchdowns. So to me, it's more about the head coach and the overall scheme and all that stuff. But that aside, is someone, in fact, mentally tough if they feel the need to tweet out that they are mentally tough? Because I would counter the other way. I would say somebody who is, in fact, mentally tough does not feel the need to go to social media to let everybody else know that they're mentally tough.
It's a unique way of looking at it. But that, to be fair, any time that whether you or I, and we haven't had many reasons to clap back at anybody on social media, but then that would imply if we or when we've clapped back in the past that it, like, the intention was not necessarily to clap back, that it could have been something else. Like, that's a slippery slope.
But clapping back is a reason.
Well, maybe he's clapping back at the haters.
Maybe
he's basically saying, hey, listen, maybe he flipped on the fan yesterday for a minute, or maybe he seems like the kind of guy who searches his mentions and sees what's being written about him on X. Maybe that's his way of saying, all right, I see what you're saying, and I'm going to tell you that I am mentally tough, and I'm going to go out and back it up on Sunday against Dallas and do it.
But I don't think this is I don't think this is the situation where it's about the starting quarterback not being good enough. Russell Wilson's barely been here.
Mm-hmm.
I think the issue here is that everybody wants to see Jackson Dart. It has nothing to do with Russell Wilson. It could be anybody. It could be Jameis Winston. It could have been Aaron Rodgers. It could be anybody. I think it's more about Jackson Dart in this spot as opposed to Daniel Jones stinks. Let's get Tommy DeVito in or the backup quarterback.
Yeah.
The starter hasn't even. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Like,
this is more about the excitement of Jackson Dart and not about the futility or failures of Russell Wilson, who's been here for a game.
I think for the most part, I agree with you. I think that you're right. But I also think that there was a different, I don't want to overstate this, a little bit of a different energy with Russell Wilson coming in, because he's had more success than Jones. He can he could still throw a deep ball. Like, the guy that I saw playing on Sunday, he's just chucking and ducking. Like,
he was under the rest the whole game.
I know, I get it. Yeah. I'm not dumping this at his doorstep. The play calling was unimaginative and awful. Sometimes they overthought it, like we talked about with Baldy, and most times they didn't think at all. They couldn't run. They couldn't stop the run. The Giants looked awful. We know this. I'm not saying it was Russell Wilson's fault entirely, but the thought is that, you know, a younger, more dynamic athlete whose head is up rather than Russ, whose eyes are down because he's afraid to get hit, or not afraid, but you know what I mean, doesn't want to get hit, and he anticipates getting hit. I just think that there was a little, for me, I thought that Russell Wilson would have a fairly decent first month or so, six, seven games to the season, where you know, I'll give you a touchdown pick ratio. Seven games, maybe 12 touchdowns, five picks, kind of protect the ball, just get in the end zone enough to keep his job and look like a representative quarterback. So that's where I was with that. But yes, it's entirely about, it's mostly about Dart, if not entirely, for many people.
We both agreed Russell Wilson should start week two, stick to the plan. What would be your breaking point where you say, okay, definitively, you got to go with Jackson Dart?
You know, I hate to be so influenced, but I am of the mindset that when people who know more than me speak, I'm going to listen to them. Now, doesn't mean I'm going to automatically change my opinion, but I might hear. I might be now of the mindset, because everybody tells me that's been around him, you know, how resilient and how intelligent Jackson Dart really is, and it doesn't seem as risky to throw him out there soon. I'm going to say that I'm okay with him playing half number two against Dallas if Russ ain't getting it done. However, I will also add this, despite the fact making fun of his tweets and all this stuff, I think that Russ is actually going to score a couple of touchdowns and the Giants will be, I don't know if they'll win, they'll look functional offensively. Dallas' defense stinks.
I think 0-4. I'm giving Russ this game. I'm giving Russ week three against the Chiefs. And I would still probably give Russ, although, you know, me, I was saying, hey, come on, you can't throw the kid to the wolves. And the more you hear it from Baldy, I'm with you. That it's not going to be as late as I initially thought. I didn't think we'd see him to maybe the bye week or week 11 or something like that. Week 11 at home.
Yep.
I would say if the Giants start 0-4, so it's not just weeks, it's also their start. That's what I'm getting into.
Yeah, no, I got you.
0-4, that to me would be like, okay, it's time to fire the salvo of going with Jackson Dart in New Orleans. The problem with that is that you get the Eagles, then at Denver, and then at Philadelphia right behind it. Like, That's a tough stretch with three good defenses, Eagles twice and the Broncos there after the Saints game. But if you think he's ready, he's ready. Throw him to the wolves. And if you're 0-4, like, that's it. Season's toast at 0-4. Probably going to be toast at 0-2 or 0-3, whatever it be. But
it's probably toast now.
Yeah, well, I mean, you're right. But if you think they're going to do well in Dallas,
I think the offense is going to score. I don't know if they'll win. I think it's going to be a close, competitive, fun game.
I'm going to stay the course and stick to the plan. But if they went 0-4, to me, that would be okay. It's Jackson Dart time.
Yeah, I mean, we harped on the schedule all year, and that's got to be the roadmap to at least get a sense of when we think he should play here. And I initially said week 10 at the Bears seemed like a logical spot. I also, early during the summer, or midway through the summer, did initially kick the tires week 5 in New Orleans. But, Mike, you couldn't have a couple layups. Like, you couldn't play Carolina or the Browns or the Dolphins, who seem like they're imploding. Like, come on, this schedule stinks.
Sonny calling from Malvern. What's up, Sonny?
Sonny.
Hey, guys, how are you?
Good.
What's happening, buddy?
Good. Good, BT, I'm with you. Listen, I'm not a football expert. I'm not a quarterback whisperer, although I know a lot about football. And I know a damn lot about Giant football. But I go according to the experts, right? Baldinger, Phil Sims, all these guys who know about quarterbacks. And if they say he's ready, and if they say to put him in ASAP, that's what I go according to. And to all these people who say you can't put him in behind that offensive line until the offensive line is ready, guys, when is the offensive line going to be ready? They
never
haven't had an offensive line that right. Dating back to 2013, even the year in the playoffs against Green Bay, they paid $200 million for the defense. They screwed Eli Manning his last 5 years of his career, Daniel Jones, and now this year. So we have to wait for that offensive line to be ready. And let me tell you something, Andrew Thomas, from what it sounds like, he may not be ready all year. He may not be 100% all year.
But, Sonny, here's the problem.
If we're waiting for that offensive line to be ready, we're going to be growing old, guys.
Understood. I said the same exact thing yesterday. Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
And thanks for the call.
Thanks, bud.
Here's the problem with that. It's not just about, well, you're waiting for the offensive line to be ready. It's about setting the quarterback up to succeed. So if you throw a young quarterback, or any quarterback, but a young quarterback to the Wolves and put him on a team that's not ready because their offensive line isn't very good, you're asking for trouble. It doesn't mean that his career is going to be derailed and he's toast automatically. It does mean that maybe they're not doing the best thing to put him in a position to succeed. And all due respect to the greats who know the game far better than I ever could, whether it's Phil Simms or Carl Banks or Brian Boulding or whoever, they're not always right either.
I agree.
So just because, and I do respect Boldy's opinion, obviously, when he said it last week, I was like, whoa. Put it on our radar. Like, I'm thinking week 11, bye week. He's saying week 5.
Yeah.
And then you see the week 1 performance, and I'm thinking, holy crap. Like, and obviously it's getting louder and louder, the calls for Jackson Dart. Doesn't mean that they're right, though. And remember, a lot of times it is the situation that these quarterbacks are put in. Josh Allen, for example. If the Giants drafted Josh Allen instead of Saquon Barkley, do you think he would be in the same spot he is in his career now than he is with the Buffalo Bills?
No, I don't. But I don't think he'd be broken, but he wouldn't be a perennial MVP candidate, you know, winning 12, 13 games, knocking on the door of the Super Bowl. No, they, because there was nothing around him.
Pat Mahomes with the Jets as opposed to the Chiefs.
Yeah, I mean, I get it. My answer is pretty much the same here. I think if Shane could get one do-over, well, aside from drafting, like, Evan Neal.
Well, that would be the one.
But that would be the massive one. And this is not a knock on the player because he's damn good, but it's the wrong resource devoted to the wrong side of the ball at the wrong time. This is not dissing Burns. This is pointing out there were so many other obvious holes up front with the draft equity, with the money that you gave Burns. Like, to ignore that. I tweeted this morning. I can't prove this. Now, you could say the Jets quarterback room and shut me up very fast, and it's actually funny, and some people did tweet that. But I was just asking aloud, can anybody name the group of, whether it's an offensive line or a backcourt or a bullpen or a starting rotation, a group, like a position player, like a group of position players for any of our teams, power play, you know, penalty kill for the Rangers, that has been so bad for so long, like the Giants offensive line. Dude, we're talking almost 20 years. They can't fix this thing.
Yeah, really, since Coughlin. Since Coughlin left, and maybe right at the end of Coughlin. That was Gettleman's first thing. He's going to get the hog mollies.
It's ridiculous.
Hector's in Washington Heights. What's up, Heck?
What's up, guys? I got to be honest, man. I'm sick to my stomach. I've been sick to my stomach since last night watching this team. I'm sick to my stomach watching my buddy Sal, who I love, but you're making me sick listening to you this morning with this positivity, and I don't know where you gain this confidence from.
That's from time.
And now I'm even more sick. I'm even more sick having to listen to Russell Wilson tweets and all. Like, I don't even want to watch this guy play. Let me tell you guys something. The Knicks better bring it this year, because my other two teams, they really make me sick. And Sal, please, Sal. Let's have a conversation here. What is there to be so confident about when you watch this team every day, besides the fact that, yes, I'll tell you, I'll give it to you, we'll make the playoffs, and if we face the Phillies four series, we'll beat them all four series. But that's not
I don't even know about that. I'm not saying that. I'm not saying if the Mets played the Phillies in the postseason that they'd beat them. All I'm saying is that they have had the Phillies' number. Doesn't mean that they're going to beat the Phillies again. What I'm saying is you make it like it's the old days with the Mets. I'm saying that it's...
No, forget about the old days.
You can't. They've been as bad as they could be, right? Everybody's saying how inconsistent, how down of a year, and they're still in the playoffs. That, to me, they're
question,
better
buddy.
Than the Reds. They're better than the Giants. The Padres...
Are they really?
Yeah.
Are they really?
Yeah, they are.
Now, when you watch this team every night, do you come away with more answers or questions? Because I come away with more questions every night.
Me too.
I come away with questions about the manager whom we love. But is he really? Does he really have a handle for this team this season? Like BT was saying, last year pitched all the right buttons. This year pushes almost all the wrong buttons. Now, a lot of times it's the players not executing. But who's going to execute? You want to talk about Edwin Diaz? Are you really confident in Edwin Diaz? And besides Edwin Diaz, who gives you confidence? Are you confident in this offense? Are we ever going to come back in the game late in the game? So give me the answers. Give me the reasons. So I want to believe.
I gave you the reasons before, and thank you for the call. If you're not confident in Edwin Diaz, I don't know what to tell you. There has been no bigger critic of Edwin Diaz than me, dating back to 2019. None. Not a single person has been more of a critic of Edwin Diaz than me. If you don't believe in Edwin Diaz at this point, I don't know what to tell you. Doesn't mean that he's perfect. Obviously, all relievers get beat at times. He's gotten the job done the majority of the time. If you're worried about him, you're barking up the wrong tree. There are a litany of other reasons. I'm confident in Juan Soto. That's another one. I'm confident that the fact that the Mets have a three-game game lead, four if you factor in the tiebreaker, over the Giants for the final playoff spot. So I'm confident they're going to make the playoffs. I'm confident in Nolan McClain. I'm confident in Lindor and Alonso come postseason. I'm confident in Tyler Rogers and Brooks Raley in the back end of that bullpen, along with Edwin Diaz. So does it mean that it's going to work out? Who the hell knows? I have no idea. But I'm confident with, to me, legitimate reason. I'm also confident that nobody else in baseball, to me, looks unbeatable at this particular point.
So one thing, I've said this for a few situations, and I know we got a break here, where the it makes me uncomfortable when we point to, even though you just pointed to things that the Mets do well, you ran through about five or six things, like sometimes when we're not sure about a situation, we're like, well, this team doesn't have this, or the league is missing this, like the Yankees, the American League is weak, so they can... I prefer to look to more tangible reasons for the team to elevate them to a certain point rather than what's not around them. And too much this year, too many components of the Mets have been substandard. That doesn't mean it can't click, and it doesn't mean that Soto can't get on a heater again, which he probably will. Lindor hit a couple of clutch bombs. Pete do the same. Bullpen lock it down. Young kids come out throwing smoke and get some wins. Of course that could happen. But to me, it's just me, although I think Hector agrees, to me there seems more wrong with the Mets when they than right. When they change that, that's when I'll change how I feel about the Mets.
Right, but all I'm saying is you're not watching the other teams every night either. Because if you did that...
I agree with that. But I do think the Padres have a little bit more talent. I do think the Phillies have been more consistent. The Brewers have definitely been more consistent. The Dodgers have championship DNA, so I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt. I think they get bored with the regular season. So, you know, I mean, it's a little bit in between, a little bit of everything there.
Padres are coming off a stretch where they've been a bit... I mean, they've won three in a row here. Outside of that, and two of them were against the Rockies.
No.
Outside of that, dude, they got swept by the Orioles at home.
The Orioles are playing very good baseball
lately.
They lost
two out of three to the Twins. They have been getting beat left and right.
How many wins do they have? I don't have it in front of me. Hold on.
Give me a sec. I'll pull it up right here. I just had it.
All right. I got it too. So the Padres have 79.
Yeah.
And the Mets have 76. Yeah. As you point out all the things the Padres are doing wrong, they got three more wins than the Mets.
Right.
Who also lost three or four to the Nationals, to the Marlins.
It's
the same script here. Except the Padres have three more wins.
Okay.
And I think they're a little bit better.
Right now they have three more wins. Last week they were tied.
I understand that, but I'm saying
in a week from today they could be tied again, or the Mets could have three more wins.
I grant you that. So, I also think that the Padres are a little more talented.
Okay, but we'll find out.
I agree.
I would have thought so too, but the Padres have cratered. Since the trade deadline, the Padres have not been playing well. The Padres are supposed to go win that division too and go out there with the Dodgers. And by the way, the Dodgers themselves have cratered. The Dodgers have 80 wins. The big bad Dodgers, we thought were unbeatable, going to win 110 games. They have 80 wins.
Yeah, I mean, I look at a team like the Dodgers, though, just... I don't think they take the regular season that seriously.
Okay.
That's a team I've got to give the benefit of. Now, they probably should have won another World Series more so than they have.
Right.
But, come on, champions a year ago.
Understood.
They do this every year. Rip off 100-and-something wins. Like, they're a different level of evaluation for me.
Maybe, but maybe not. I mean, sometimes they go out in the postseason with 100 wins. Maybe they get in the postseason with 90 wins this year, and they have success. I have no idea. But all I'm saying is I'm not scared of the Dodgers. Dodgers don't look unbeatable to me, and I'll take my chances in a short series. Maybe the Mets, who have played up to their opponent, maybe they have been waiting to get to the postseason. I don't know. That's not right, but who's to say? And like I said, I gave you the legit reasons before. It's not about everybody else. I still think they have some pieces in place here.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And you're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.